Alright, time for another DoNotGod.com.
Google is evil. Video presentation.
Yes, Google's evil. I'm sure somebody owns that website, domain, but you know, I haven't even bothered to go look. Probably should. It's probably owned by Google, you know. Unfortunately, that's how the world works. I guess that's sort of what I'll make another video talking about how the world works and how it doesn't work, what fails. And it's just really the story of computers, you know, just robots. It's just the universe is making machines. Okay. Yeah. And yes, it's, you know, it's impressive because it doesn't happen too often, you know. So it's like all the stuff in the world that's unique or completely different. I don't know. You know, the potato chip that looks like Britney Spears or something. So, yes, you should pay attention because it's, hey, that's completely different. So, yeah, it's completely different. But it's not, you know, mystical or magical. It's just the way the universe works. And what it does. And so I guess I'll draw some of this. I'll try that. Something a little different. So let me go to the drawing board. Alright, I'm back. Alright, so you could start just with some basic understanding of the universe is full of stuff. Now, we'll disagree because everybody needs to have some wooey understanding of, you know, how stuff moves in the universe, but let's just say it's clumpy. Okay, the big universe, you can see it turns into clumps of crap. And there's lots of little pieces still in the big pieces. So that's what's happened sort of on the Earth, is that, yes, you have a bunch of little pieces. Well, here's the big Earth. It's not very big. And it's not very bright either. Oh, come on, what's wrong with this thing? Not drawing very well. Alright, well anyway, you get the idea, I think. Vaguely enough, a little bit. I mean, really, how much do you need to know? Alright, and so there's just activity. There's a bunch of stuff moving around still. So it was made out of little stuff moving. The little stuff became big stuff moving. The big stuff is still moving. You know, the center of the Earth is still melted. So there's stuff banging into each other, pushing each other around, you could argue, blah, 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 blah. And we know it's sort of just made out of these elemental things, and that you just really are just making building blocks of other stuff. So you stack blocks, and you can make things out of the blocks. The chemistry sticks together, so it's, again, clumpy. So you take the basic atoms, and then you can make a million different compounds, which are just long molecules. You know, you could just say they're, you know, they can be that shape, or they could be round, or they could be all kinds of different shapes. You know, this little thing is stuck to this little thing, and that's stuck to this little thing, and that's stuck to this little thing. You know, they're shapes. And eventually, on Earth, through this process of the universe just, you know, heat doing all this crap, a very rare event takes place where you actually make a stupid molecule, okay, that's an association. It really, you know, to mean anything, it has to be an association with another molecule. But let's just say it's just a hunk of peanut butter. You know, it's just a molecule that's a little bit long, and, you know, it's made out of these elements, right? But it doesn't get fatter, it just gets longer. So you can stick to one end or you can stick to the other end, but you can't make anything stick out this way. So unlike other molecules that could be very spiky, okay, this molecule is long, and it, you know, it can get longer, and it, you know, and it's just made out of basic elements, though. Like, you could say four things, you know, red, blue, green, pink, or something, and you can arrange the red, green, blue, pink in a certain way, and so it's just a molecule. It doesn't mean much. But then there's some other molecule that gets made, okay, you know, that actually, you know, can bang into this molecule, and it will basically, you know, read, okay, as it goes along, what the other molecule is doing. Now, you could say that could happen in a lot of different ways. Like, this molecule could just be a version of it, all right, where you know, it bangs into another version of this, or even it folds on itself, you know, And the fact is that, yes, it becomes the DNA molecule is what I'm getting to. So there's just this molecule that is basically a copy of itself, okay? It only, the only thing it can stick to it is something that's exactly the opposite of itself, or however you want to look at it. But it has the same code built into it. And so once you've made this thing, you know, this idea of a piece of code, okay, color code, Morse code, however you want it, code, okay, it's not a code that means anything yet, it's just a code, all right, and the other side just ends up being the same code, because that's the way things stick together. You know, likes attract or likes repel, doesn't really matter how you think of it, it's just that that's what it makes. All right, and it has this stupid, you know, DNA form, you know, the double helix thing, but who cares? I mean, that's just the way it connects, you know, that's just the way the ladder works. Anyway, so then you have to go through this process of splitting it in half, all right, and so that has to be some other thing, some other event, some other machine likes to do that. It just happens to be that this thing has this toxic effect. So it's like an acid melting something, you know, it's just the chemistry is just not very compatible. And this molecule ends up hitting this molecule in a certain place, and it'll end up just ripping all of those little connections. It'll eat them, so to speak. And it'll just separate this one from this one. And so then it's got a little copying machine. And that doesn't mean too much until you have some other thing, okay, that's involved here, that when it hits, unlike the little eating machine that splits it in two, this other one rides along and it chemically changes with the environment as it sticks. So it ends up creating different compounds out for the compounds that go in. So as it goes in, it starts releasing like oxygen or something. Or it releases, you know, some other, you know, carbon dioxide. Some other element that's stuck on it when it sticks to a certain pink. You know, if it hits the pink code, it releases an oxygen molecule. When it hits the blue code, it releases, you know, carbon monoxide. It's releasing a compound based on what it interacts with. And then it can get even more complicated that when it interacts with a certain sequence, it ends up, you know, producing the product. So it needs the sequence. It has to first hit it, and then it absorbs something, and then it hits it, and then it releases something. Absorbs something, and then, you know, it releases the big molecule, or it splits in half, or it does something completely different. Yeah. So in that circumstance, now this thing is now controlling the external environment, you could say. What comes, you know, what comes into the environment, what it interacts with will be changed based on how this other molecule rides against this molecule. All right, and the catch has to be that somehow in that process, this molecule ends up, you know, this thing ends up creating this thing, or vice versa, this thing ended up creating that thing. But they're probably tied together in some way. You know, the reader and the splitter are probably products of the same. One made the other, or the other made it. It has to be one way or the other. But they're connected. All right, and this process now makes it possible that every time this thing, this copying process takes place and you split this molecule, you will read it differently, okay? Like this copy is a doesn't have this little thing here. It has a pink instead of a blue here. So now it reads different, and now it creates a different environment. And now you get into the whole, how did it create, you know, it ends up producing chemistry, and the chemistry ends up being, you know, eventually you end up with a membrane around the molecule because it creates a chemistry, and now all of this is controlled chemistry, and then this is controlling what this is made out of, and this becomes a filter that only lets certain things in and certain things out, so certain size molecules go in and out, blah blah, you know, certain things stick and go through the membrane. So all of this starts becoming maximized in the sense that you're just really saying is this, now that this molecule can be copied, you know, it's just about what version does the best at copying. That is, makes more and more of these things. And clearly part of the process has to be all right, back. Bit of an allergy attack. So, don't know exactly where I was, but it's really not the point of this video, and it probably just bores most people anyway. But there's this whole bunch of chemistry that took place, you know, where a tiny, tiny portion of possible chemical reactions, you know, very rare chemistry, frankly, very unusual chemistry, very sequence of events, not very probable to create this. The basic idea of this cell that, you know, basically splits in half and the two halves go about their adventures. And then you have this, you know, subtle modification where the cells first exchange the DNA and then do the splitting, and that's the sexual part. Okay, so, it's just another... It's what works, and it's what survives in the environment. And so this is the beginning of evolution, you know, the beginning of you're creating something that creates an imperfect copy, and then the original now competes with the copy, okay, and, you know, winner take all, so to speak, eventually. And that's the beginning of evolution, and the making of machines that will cover the surface of the earth. So you can sort of understand that if once you make one of these things that can replicate itself, it can replicate itself and it replicate itself, there's nothing obligating the first copy to die. So, you know, it could, all of the chemistry can end up looking like this, you know, because that's what it does. It consumes the environment and the pieces to reconstruct copies of the molecule. And the thing that does that the quickest, you know, owns the territory. I'll erase this and we'll sort of get to wherever the point is. All right, so there's so many ways that there's so many little complications in the system, like something as simple as the difference between cloning each cell and the idea that the cells would communicate with each other and combine their DNA. Just the first off, the obvious thing, which is it mutates the molecule, okay, the code. It makes for more changes in the copy. So, you know, because you're combining two DNA molecules that aren't the same, and so the code you're going to create, okay, it's more likely to be broken. It's not going to be in a copy of either thing that contributed. So you're taking half the DNA from one thing and half the DNA from another thing and combining them. And they do redundant things, and they're not going to do the same redundant thing. And therefore, the new copy isn't going to be a copy of either one of them. It's going to be, you know, so it's likely to be a Frankenstein, frankly. It's not likely that it's going to be better than the two originals. It's likely it's going to be something lesser, but the way evolution works is, you know, 1 in 100 will be improved. So 99 will be less than the parents, and 1 will be better than the parents. And that's what evolution is always seeking, is the thing that's better, you know, that's better than the previous version. And the test is the environment. And, you know, it's kind of a cruel system when you think of the little things as having a welfare. But the fact is that for most of this history and for most of the stuff doing this, none of it has a brain, none of it's in, you know, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter whether it's, you know, it doesn't matter the fate of these things. It's just a way for a system to modify and create objects that are able to take in the resources of the environment, all right, and produce them. Okay, so they turn stuff into them. All right, that's how they just cover the earth. So it looks like, you know, everything just, oh, like this life thing is just so easy because it populates a surface so quickly. But it only does that because it's designed to do that. That's the mechanism. It's just a resource consumer to make copies of something. And it didn't matter whether the copies does something or it doesn't do something. I mean, the copies could just be, you know, little steel blocks, you know, and the system would still be doing the same thing, but obviously just steel blocks wouldn't be able to manipulate the environment and consume resources and do all the things it needs to do to be able to replicate. But that's all it's doing. It's just making a chemical compound, the DNA molecule. And so it's the really just the molecule that's evolving in the sense that all of the objects it makes are just proving the DNA molecule. So it's really just a way of testing the DNA molecule. So, you know, our existence is just a test for a DNA molecule, and that's all it is. You just exist because you're basically a form of the molecule. You're going to be tested, and the test is, did you consume and reproduce at proper efficiency in the environment to be the winner, okay, and be able to create more copies of you? And So things did that, and you end up with a bunch of stuff that's pretty much the same. I mean, all the ducks are, you know, ducks. Now, there are the subtle changes, tiny changes, but not too dramatic in terms of obviously they have the same dilemma, all the mammals, so I shouldn't have picked mammals or birds or things with developed brains, because they can have nuances based on the environment they're raised in and all that kind of stuff. They can be programmed by the environment. But most of this stuff produced just comes out as little robots. And everything it does is already decided for it, in the sense that it only has certain reflexes, certain reactions. And so, like a paramecium or something can look like it's doing, you know, like it's going through the world and it's learning and it's adventuring and it's, but that just looks that way. It just has little programs in it that say if I hit something and it won't move, all right, and so it figures out first whether or not the thing might eat it. You know, it detects that in some way or other, some little trigger. And if it detects that it has to reverse, you know, then it has a plan. And if it can't reverse, well, then it goes into another plan that says, you know, go this way, then go this way, you know, a wiggling plan. And so it just learns a strategy through evolution, where every time you bang into a certain thing, you react a certain way. And if that works, you escape the jaws of the, you know, the other molecule that was trying to consume you, then you're going to be the winner. You're going to reproduce. There'll be more copies of you. And so then that program wins. But the program was in the genetic code. I mean, that's where the program exists. All right. So, see, there's just so many levels of this complexity to get anywhere. You know, we're not even close to, you know, making a mammal yet. Yeah. And you know, there's just, and there's so much nuance to it. You know, how much, you know, how, you know, the whole way evolution works is that, okay, you get more of this mutating stuff happening in small populations, you know, and because in a big population, all of the, you know, the 1 in 100 kind of guy, he can get diluted out. You know, he is much better, but the fact is there's 100, you know, there's 99 other guys who are, you know, trying to catch the bitches too. And even though he's the superior genetic, you know, he has the third eye, or he can see twice as good, or whatever the thing is, he has some really great advantage, he's still going to get diluted, all right, because he's not going to be able to wipe out the other 99, all the 99 competitors. He's only going to be able to do a little better than them. Even though he's a lot better than them. So, you know, you're likely to get, any improvement gets diluted out of existence, where in small populations, it's really easy for the superior thing to stand out and dominate. And so, you know, most of the evolution happens in little corners, you know. It doesn't happen in giant herds. So the idea is you have a giant herd of a successful copy, you know, buffalo or whatever. And what really happens is a few of the buffalo say, fuck this. And, you know, they wander off to say, you know, it's too crowded, whatever. Fuck those people. You know, fuck you, I'm going home. They go off wandering out, and or they get isolated. You know, an earthquake happens, they get separated, or there's a stream full of crocodiles, and a couple of them say, screw this, I'm not crossing that stream. So they end up isolated. Okay, and what happens is they end up being very successful, and they end up making a giant herd. Okay, and so then eventually this herd is in conflict with this herd, they start to interbreed, and this herd wins. It defeats the old copy because it has the numbers to do it. So little populations, you know, are big success, and they basically just wipe out their ancestors. Yeah, kind of deal. All right, we'll race again. All right, so what am I doing here? What's this video? All right, so this video is basically, look, we're here, okay? We're at a position in this process that I'll talk a little bit more about, because it's really important to understand, how did we get to this place that we are? What are we? And then we're sitting here, okay, at this particular point in this process of evolving, right? Now, I would argue that the physical evolution has ended somewhere down here, okay, and what's really just evolving now is what's in our, you know, what's in our little heads, okay? That's the only thing evolving, is the brain crap in here, okay, in there. You know, so that's what the real story is, because this physical evolution is sort of, I mean, there's still some of it going on, but it's just really a, you know, you're just talking about a pedigree of dog. And what kind of dog are we physically becoming, you know? And obviously I would argue we're, you know, muddifying. We're turning into mutts. You know, where before we were sort of specialized to environments. You know, you could tell where somebody's, you still can, you can sort of tell where somebody's from in terms of what kind of climate, because it's still written sort of on your face, you know. But anyway, so the point is that we're in a place here, and we look like we're going somewhere, all right? Certain things are going to inevitably happen because of what we're setting up, okay, for a future. And the point is that we do have these other options exist, okay, but they're only options based on, you know, how this line wiggles. It can wiggle this way, or it can wiggle this way, depending on what was in people's heads. So what people think will decide which way this thing goes in terms of what its future is, and what kind of mess it's going to make, what the surface of the earth will look like, and what kind of crap will be happening on it. Now, the underlying argument I'm trying to make here is this process of evolution. This story is just evolution as a process, which is the basic idea of make a whole bunch of something, all right, and have it beat the shit out of each other, okay, in a contest. So, you know, a bunch of this stuff can get destroyed in some horrible, nasty way. Okay, so a couple can reach the future. And they reach the future only in the sense that they reproduce, that is, they create copies of themselves and maybe extra copies, okay, to force the rest of the world to die more, okay? They want their babies to live so other people's babies die. That's evolution, okay? And, you know, it's a replacement game. And it's musical chairs, except it's life and death musical chairs. And that's what needs to be understood, that there's nothing in this, okay, that is intelligent or sensible or kind or in any way appreciating, you know, an idea of minimizing harm or, you know, being considerate or respectful for something's welfare or any of that. This is cruel. So you have to understand the system that's making us, and it's in a part making our future, is a cruel system. It's not a wonderful thing. It's not a beautiful thing. It's an ugly, disgusting thing, in the sense that once you realize that each one of these little, once you realize all these samples, all these trial balloons are real things that had real value, and that they were treated shabbily by the process. That's unacceptable once you have a brain that can do any reasonable thinking, any logic. So once you can do some logic and recognize that, oh yeah, I'm perfectly aware of how important it is I'm not tortured, then you realize it's really easy to figure out it's important that all these other things aren't tortured either. And the fact is the system we're part of doesn't acknowledge any of that. And you can't be obedient to a system that stupid. That's like being a Hitlerite. I mean, you know, that's like respecting or appreciating the worst, you know, debaucherous human you could construct, because you'd have to be insane. You'd have to be a psycho killer to think this is a good model, like this is a good plan. This is a good mechanism. It's a horrible mechanism. Evolution is nasty. It's a nasty way to make gifts, you know, presents. It's grinding up, you know, puppies and kittens, you know, to make a robot. Anyway, that's where I'm heading. Yeah, so I'll keep heading there, kind of. All right, so before we get to the evolution of the memes, the verbal programs, the environmental programs, the information programs, let's just say, the programs made out of the sentences we speak to each other, okay, the ideas we convey to each other. It could be in the form of images and all that, but anyway, before we get to that, I do like to emphasize that, you know, the model we're, you know, based on, that, you know, it's the most obvious. I mean, people find it offensive to be compared to a monkey, you know, but the real thing that we really are, we're just fish, okay? You know, the fish has all the stuff we have, you know, in terms of functionality. It has the smelling thing and the tasting thing and the seeing thing and the hearing thing, and, you know, vibrations anyway. And the legs and the feet, and the arms and the legs, and even the little fingers are there, you know, already. So, that's the model. And what is it? You know, when you look at this thing, yeah, it's the mouth for consuming, you know, and the stomach and the digestion, and you know, the pooper, and you know, the motivator, the thing that moves it through. And yeah, the rest of it are just tools, the eyes, and you know, it can even have little antennas, or it can have whiskers or some other kind of crapola to sense the environment, you know, and be more capable of reacting to it. But what do you see when you really see a fish? I mean, it just sits there and you see something that's just basically saying you have to trigger it. So like a reflex, you have to hit it, you know, in the right way, and then it reflexes. And you can see that fish are just doing that. They're just sitting around waiting for, you know, something hits here, and the jack-in-the-box pops open, right? You crank the handle, and you vibrate it a little bit, and the little thing pops out, the little clown, and, you know, it does its action. So its actions and its reactions are all fishy. You know, they're all basically the same. They're really predictable in terms of their behavior. And it's just this mix. You can just see the machineness of it. You can see it's almost like a slow process of triggering the behavior. And you can see fish just sitting there saying, waiting. Am I hungry? Am I horny? Am I, what am I? You know, and they're just waiting for the environment and their internal mechanism to say, it's time to do this, it's time to do that. So it's just a bunch of little clocks going off, you know, inside. And then the environment is, you know, turning the wheels on some of the clocks. And then, you know, the clock hits 12 and there's an action, you know, and that's it. They're just robots, mostly. But the key fact is that, yeah, you can train a fish, he can learn. So a fish can learn that if it swims right, it gets food. And if it swims left, gets smacked in the head. So it has some capacity to, part of the clocks it's storing is little information, okay, about what happens when you do certain things in terms of a reward and a punishment. And, you know, that's a key feature in terms of starting to program something. But yes, it's a really rudimentary calculator versus computer. I mean, there's a huge difference between the function of the fish brain and people. So that's the big difference. But the rest of it's just sort of superficial. The rest of the differences, you know, aren't all, it's not like it's impossible to see the fishness of us, and especially when you start looking inside of us and you see all the red seawater, you know, it becomes a little more obvious what our origin would be, that we're really sea creatures because we have a bunch of salt water inside of us. But anyway, all right. There's so many little things, little subjects, you know, about, you know, fish. There's, you know, two varieties, right? There's, you know, well, you can break everything down, all these, you know, the subtleties of it. You know, there's fish that still lay eggs, okay, and then the other fish comes by and fertilizes the eggs when they're outside of the female, right? And then you got the others that they have sex first, right? And so, you know, you could go into the whole story of the invention of the male organ, and as I've speculated, it's probably, you know, it's probably an aggressive, you know, nasty weapon is its invention. I mean, it's really just saying when you do it this way, you got to compete with all these other fish in being the first one, right? Because once the egg's fertilized, it can't be fertilized twice, so it's like the first one gets there wins. So the idea is, well, how do you get there faster than the other guy? Well, maybe, you know, try to fertilize the eggs before she lays them. And so, you know, the first penis was probably a weapon. And it's just it's a way of cheating, you know, get there first. And so it does seem like the fish that crawled out of the slime, you know, and took over the earth were, you know, penis enabled versus the other option. But anyway, but lots of stuff crawled out of the ocean, right? The slugs and the snails crawled out, and what other stuff crawled out? The crabs, you know, they became the spiders and all that kind of crap. So you have the snails and you have the spiders, you know, the crabs, and so you can see these different categories. They all eventually decide to get the hell out of the ocean. And it's another way of just defeating the whole God stories, right? Because they all have to do with some sort of, even if they have evolution and they have, like, the evolution happened on land, like somehow the first organisms, the first mammals or something, were made out of dust. And no, they're made out of goo. You know, it all happened in the water first, and then the crap crawled out of the water. But anyway, I think they're all important facts, frankly. They all, have meaning to me in terms of me understanding my place in the universe, you really have to, before you can understand where you're going, you got to understand where you came from and what the hell you're being controlled by. And frankly, we're still being controlled by the agenda. The fish agenda is still in us. And that's a real downside, because fish are dumb. Alright, so I think another important thing to kind of have the right idea about, okay, is understanding a reaction, action and reaction, and just understand reflexes and what our brain is, okay, as a central processing unit. It's really not as distinct as that would be for a computer or something where you have an actual chip. The actual chip just does one thing, blah, 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 blah. I don't know if the analogy really works, because the difference between the way it communicates with the outside world isn't like sense organs. You know, it's more direct keyboard code kind of crap. But anyway, don't want to get into all that. So you have the simple design of the, you know, the input and the output, you know. Stuff has to go in, you have to process the stuff, you have to digest it, and then you make eggs out of it, okay, to create your new little monsters, okay. And so you have to consume in the environment, you have to not get killed by the other stuff, you have to win the competition, all that crap, to lay the eggs to make the copies, you know, and that's the system. And so you can have an eyeball, or you can have some other tool, okay, that will evolve piece at a time, that will be part of the system. So obviously the first eye was just a reflex. It just said stop and go, probably, right? When it's dark, don't do anything. When it's light, do something. And then it started, you know, evolving all these little features, you know, where... you know, shadows weren't the same thing as it being dark, clouds weren't being dark, you know, all that kind of subtlety got built into it, so it gets, the reflex gets a little more complicated than being just a simple knee jerk. But it's all based on knee jerking. It's all based on something happens somewhere, an event, and the event is turned into, okay, it's a cause for another event. Okay, so you have a circumstance, and then so you want this idea that it gets more complicated, right? I mean, you have an A circumstance, a B circumstance, C, D, and you only want the trigger to happen, the action to happen, if A, C, and D are on and B is off. You know, some sort of rule that will distinguish between what you can eat, okay, and what you don't eat. So there's rules that'll make you more successful at laying eggs, surviving to lay them, if you don't try to, you know, pick a fight with something much bigger than you, or all these kind of rules. And the rules get learned, and it's basically in the form of just a reflex that calculates, does this simple calculation. And so all of that, you know, would get very complicated if each sense was its own brain and trying to process all of this stuff. So obviously it became more efficient to put all of the data processing in one place, so you didn't have redundancy for each and every single sense, didn't have to redundantly know all these rules and do all of this stuff and do all these calculations and figure out what the impulse was going to be. So anyway, so yes, it all ended up being, you know, the senses just wired into the brain and let the brain figure out this code that says act or read, don't act, do this, do that, all that kind of stuff. So it's not only controlling now what comes in, you know, the inputs are triggers, but it's also controlling how triggerable it is, okay, and it also is controlling how subtleties of the output. You know, you can run slow, you can run fast, you know, you can jump, you can skip, you can do different kinds of reactions to an act, you know, the code getting hit, the triggers being pulled, and the gun can fire all kinds of different bullets, you know, that kind of thing. And so that's what a brain does. And So that's really the subject for human beings, is what's in our brain, okay? What triggers our brain? And so obviously we're still doing the I get hungry and I have to figure out how to, you know, have a decent meal to eat, you know, an enjoyable meal. So I have to cook it and I have to, I have to do something. I have to say something nice to the bitches so they'll cook me food, blah, blah, blah. You know, you have to figure out a strategy to get your food, your basics. You have to have a roof and stay out of the weather and all of this stuff. So we have lots of agenda that we have to successfully accomplish if we're going to even be able to, you know, sit in a basement and make videos. Even that minimum life. Requires a lot of engineering to make happen. And then there's the stuff that goes on that doesn't have anything to do with trying to get food and trying to stay warm. And then you might even think about, you know, sex and, you know, having some sort of adventure, you know, because you have an impulse that just, you know, like hunger and like the other impulses, you have these impulses, okay, that are go back all the way to the little squigglies, go back all the way to the fish, you know. And, they're built in, you know, these drives and desires, okay, that are intended to incentivize your machine into doing certain things, okay. And it's really just an incentive. Reward and punishment is only exists. You only feel over the subject because the idea is that evolution said, you know, it's better to have a machine that can adjust to changes in the environment, because the world that existed for your parents isn't the world you're going to exist in. So having their programming isn't going to get you too far, because now the other stuff has evolved and changed. The monksters now have a different mask they're wearing. And so you have to be able to adjust to that. And that's why there's a system built into us that allows us to modify the programming based on our personal experience, based on how we've won and lost in life. How many times we got beat up and all these things that happened to us are now stored as is now programming what triggers us. We're triggered based on how we've been programmed by our life experience, and that all happens through this sensations, and the fact that these sensations, these emotional programs, these emotional thoughts, you know, those these words and ideas and images tied to feelings, okay, that are good and bad sensations we had in experiencing something, and the sensations we had in experiencing it will decide whether we do that again, or how we're going to react when the same environmental circumstances happen. You know, it's the deja vu thing. All of a sudden we feel discomfort. Well, it's because we've been triggered by something in the environment that is connecting to some kind of not so good adventure. And that's stimulating an apprehension, a fear. So that's where we are. And so everything we're doing now, like the primary function, like I don't need to talk about eating or sleeping or, you know, all the other little bullshit that I do that has to do with just feeling comfortable and, you know, trying to feel satisfied. I could say how, well, I'm still emotionally controlled by some need to justify my existence. So if, you know, somebody has a flat tire, I'll change the tire for them because I need to somehow make myself valuable, because I have to justify my existence in a way. So I have different little emotional problems where I tend to get into things that I really don't want to do, but I'm doing them because inside of me somewhere is some sense that I need to justify, I need to defend, I need to demonstrate that I'm somehow deficient, and I have to somehow cover up the deficiency and make it look like my arm isn't broken. You know, it's just emotional rubbish that I'm still controlled by, you know, in the sense that, you know, I will instinctively, almost without, even though I'm thinking, don't do it, I'll still commit to something that there's no reason why I'm bothering. Because, yeah, I do have other things to do and probably better and more important things to do. It's not my job to, you know, see, this is where, you know, it gets complicated. Because obviously it would be my job to go pet the cat, you know, or try to do something to mitigate against the, you know, harms that something else might incur. So the things you do out of pity or sympathy, well, they're a little different than what I'm talking about in terms of the things we do out of emotional manipulation, you know, and the fact that we might be insecure or defensive in how we approach our life and blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, so there's a whole bunch of this subject. But the real subject is the ideas, the idea about what we are and understanding it's just a robot. And yet it has this unique feature where we can feel. And the feeling part is the part that just screws the whole game, because obviously it's not about what you're thinking, it's about what you're feeling, and people are going to react to whether it creates a positive or a negative feeling. So if you tell them, well, it's better for you just to expedite the process and not lay the eggs, you know, just end the game, stop playing. Well, that's against all of their programming. All the programming says eat, you know, poo, do these things, you know, because that's what you're, you know, that's what you're programmed to do. You're not programmed to, you know, drive off the cliff or into the brick wall. You're not programmed to destroy yourself. You're programmed to do this other crap. And so the very idea of even suggesting that you benignly or gracefully, you know, discontinue the process of being a part of this evolution thing, you know, is something people negatively react to, because it's basically saying there's something negative in them, and so they just get defensive and defend the machine that they are, and so it's just another emotional trap based on their insecurities and their being completely owned by emotional sensations and, you know, emotional reactions, let's put it that way. You know, that somehow that's accepting defeat when, no, it's accepting reality, which is being smart. Being smart is good. That should give you a good feeling to be smart. Smarter than a DNA molecule, you know, and but that's the problem, right? Being smarter than a DNA molecule, I mean, that's not asking much. And if that's the best you can do, you know, you're really falling short. So they won't even go there because they can't play that game well enough, right? So they won't even play the actual intelligence game because they already know they're going to fail, because all they have is emotional intelligence, and it's not the same thing. It's the DNA's game. It's not the smart things game. Something like that. All right. But we're getting there. All right. So back again. And so puzzle solving is what came to mind in trying to describe the what's going on in a brain, so I can just, you know, I'll illustrate what my brain does. Okay, so I could say when I was a kid, you know, 90% of the brain, okay, was just doing girl thing, you know, how do I make her love me, or how do I make this interesting, or how do I make myself look better, or how do I improve my status. You know, I was kind of a runt. So I had to, you know, I had all kinds of insecurity problems, and I was just sort of obsessed about trying to fix all of this, somehow doing something right for a change. And it's like I couldn't somehow put whatever skills I had to any good use. You know, I mean, I could run faster than almost everyone. I had certain abilities, but I couldn't seem to make it, like, 'cause I couldn't play along in the industries, the machines, the, you know, I wasn't very good at rule following, and everything was done in ways that I thought, you know, that just I wouldn't do them that way. I mean, paper napkins and wooden spoons and different things, little things that would annoy the hell out of me. Sticky things. Oh, it's just, you know. So I had all kinds of issues. And so I was completely preoccupied with just trying to find some way to figure out how the hell I was going to have a good day. Because every day seemed kind of shitty. And it was kind of, you know, it was kind of funny. After my father died, he had a journal from when he was young. And he didn't, you know, like most people with journals, he didn't keep it up, you know. So it was only over a period of, you know, whatever, 18 months or something. But there was a lot of insight in it, in the sense that he always woke up like, oh, it's another day, you know. And I always woke up with, oh, fuck, it's another day. You know, it's such a gigantic difference in terms of, you know, how he felt about his place in the world and how I felt about how my place in the world. And just a gigantic difference in that I was just struggling to survive, you know, and it's just like everything was just, you know, a challenge, a horrible obstacle. Everything was cleaning up something, you know, it was all just, you know, there was no glory in any of it. Well, anyway, so yeah, so I was completely preoccupied by all that crap. And then, you know, when I hit to 10 or 13 or 11 or whatever, I started getting these ideas about how I was really an asshole, a selfish, self-absorbed, self-interested jerk, in that, you know, I was using all this brain energy over what happens to me, and there's all these other things shit's happening to, too. And, you know, so I acquired a great deal of empathy, and, you know, I started taking care of animals and doing all kinds of other stuff, you know, because I saw the fact that I, you know, it was just an obligation of realizing, that the jeopardy wasn't just me. It was a whole bunch of things stuck in this shit. And I should do what I can to help all the other stuff too, because it's doing the same thing I'm doing, which is struggling, and struggling sucks. So I became kind of interested in fixing things. And so that was sort of another obsession. You know, like I said, that sort of happened before 11, but I'm just saying it's probably part of the same realization that this is a way of you know, reclamating or making it worth it, was that there was some outcome that was positive. So I guess I became obsessed with breaking things first rather than fixing them, because I just wanted to know how everything worked, because that was part of the challenge of why I wasn't fitting in, was sort of understanding how everything else worked. You know, so, well, anyway. So that's what you can do with your brain, right? So there's lots of people I'm talking to right now where, yeah, your brain is 90% obsessed with the puzzle of just getting through your life, okay? Just finding whatever, your nirvana, you know, trying to figure out a strategy where tomorrow you're going to end up in a better place than you are today, you know, that the grass will be greener and the whatever. You'll have your little happiness, you know, you'll get the girl, and somehow it'll work out just fine, and it won't lead to alcoholism and divorce and all of that shit. But anyway, that's what you're doing with your brain. It's just, you know, and you're just feeding it. You're just hungry for a story and a fantasy, and you're just looking for porn. Okay, you're just hunting for some, you know, brain interaction that gratifies you, all right, rather than doing the bigger job, which is using your brain, okay, to see that there's all these puzzles in the world, okay? There's what I'm having a conversation about. There's evolution, and there's physics, and there's the history, and there's, you know, all these important relativity, some sort of concept of what the bigger universe and your context in it and all that kind of stuff. And that's the shit here, you know, and then what's the social implications and where's our society heading? So where are we heading as, you know, where are we heading as a town, right? As a state, as a country, as a human race, and then you can get into the difference, you know, the diversity thing is, you know, to me so toxic because it's, you know, it's sort of just a lie to say that diversity isn't toxic because it just is. It is toxic. We lack an ability to identify with each other. And that just makes us DNA molecules in competition, you know, and it's not a good thing. But anyway, that's a whole nother subject. But all that's in the context of that's the puzzles to solve. The puzzles to solve is what's the right approach? What should we do? What should we subsidize? What should we discourage? How law should we pass? What this? What this? What ideas should we, you know, try to get people? What should we encourage in people? Oh yeah, well watch videos on philosophy. understand your place, your fishy place in the universe. That you're really just fish singing and dancing, and that most of the stuff we're using to feed our emotional problems, the Olympics and baseball and football, I mean, all this, you know, ballet and, you know, little storytelling, you know, people are living for all this little, you know, these fantasy fairy stories, and they're completely, that's what their brain is working on, is how they can viscerally connect themselves to some Three Pigs story, you know, and have an adventure. it's a waste of perfectly good brain, in my opinion. You should be doing something a little better than entertaining yourself with silly little narratives that you're running in your head, and get on with the real work, which is trying to solve the problem for all these other brains that are going to be tortured and put in jeopardy and put at risk because of how sloppy we've organized our towns and our states and our nations and the human race and all of that. So, I mean, but really the puzzle isn't, again, the puzzle is just understanding the system is just making robots. You're just triggered. And you can either be triggered by an environmental circumstance, a tornado is coming, or you can be triggered because Trump is coming, you know, an idea is coming, the Republicans are coming, you know, you can be triggered by lots of different things, and you're going to be triggered because of the program. What you've, you know, there's 10 ideas, you know, and it just depends on whether you accept or reject one of those ideas, you know, makes you a Republican or a Democrat. Makes you a liberal or a conservative. You know, both are just the terminology doesn't even come close to working anymore. The liberals aren't, you know, the only thing they're liberal about is how much of an asshole you can be. I guess it's just about their preference in asshole. You know, what, you know, whether you're a black asshole or a white asshole or a, they're just as fascist as the fascists. They're, you know, pretending they're fighting. But anyway, don't want to get into that politics stuff, but I mean, that's all part of this point, is that that's the real challenge for this programmed brain, is to have the programming, you know, the pieces of code, the pieces of knowledge that will enable it to logically see paths, okay, of actions and reactions that will cause the effect of changing the environment. And that's what the simple fish is doing in a way through its process of evolution, is changing the environment. It's going to make itself into the predator and make something else into the prey. Our brains are going to decide our future a lot more than all of this conversation about DNA molecules and evolution. And what's in our brains are just ideas. And there should be some discretion about what ideas are acceptable, and obviously stupid, idiotic crap about a God that created you and all that crap. But, I mean, come on. Grow up. The fact that we're just mechanical devices programmed by millions, hundreds of millions of years of brain evolution, body evolution, hormone evolution, and programmed by environmental meme engines, you know, Walter Cronkite for me, I don't know who, Sally Silly Pants for you, you know, I don't know who your news readers are now. It's also, it's, the world has gotten so pathetic. I mean, it's so low bar, you know. It's all just low bar. But anyway, yes, that's probably enough. So that's the context, right? Is trying to have the conversation about the facts, the 100. Let's say there's just 100 facts that you recognize, you know, that you accurately describe reality with, okay? Accurate statements describing our reality. And if you have those 100 facts, the logic is always going to lead to the understanding that all of this DNA crap is just a waste engine. It's just causing torture for a song and dance. I mean, you're putting torture in, and you're getting a song and dance out. You're getting a little fable three pig story. You know, it's not worth torture. It's not worth anything, frankly. It can only be, only a fish could fuck it. Okay, only a dumb animal could see a point in getting excited and, you know, attempting to mount it. So anyway, yeah, the facts are unmountable. You know, in any good way. Yeah, that's probably enough. All right, so we'll call it a video. A little different than the usual video, I guess. But whatever. Have to try some different things, I suppose. Yeah, and we suppose. Anyway, till the next time and such. This has been DoNotGod.com video presentation. And Google is evil is one of the facts. Yeah. Maybe it's in the pool of 1,000 facts. It's probably not one of the top 100 facts you need to know. But it's definitely a fact it's worth knowing. That's for sure. All right. Till the next time. I mean, it's just ruining internet communication. Just ruining it. All right. Till the next time and such.